welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hey, Mark, you surviving the fall okay?
Yeah, got a little bit of what I'm telling people to call an acute cough illness, not bronchitis, because I don't want an antibiotic. We're actually doing a little bit of research and kind of doing the analysis, and it turns out that the average duration of one of these from start to completely better is about 18 days. But when we ask patients, they thought it was about 6 or 7 days. So I think we need to do a better job of setting expectations for our patients. And I'm looking forward to another 8 days of coughing.
You've always been a trendsetter here, and you know you're the first guy I've seen with a sort of seasonal cold, so it's probably coming our way here.
Yeah, it's been in Athens for several weeks now, and yeah. I spent the weekend on Sapelo Island, which is a very remote island, only a few year-round residents, and with the University of Georgia group, so I'm sure somewhere in the crowded van on the way to Sapelo I got coughed on.
Right, crowded vans and planes,
yeah,
and elevators. Let's start with this week's poem. This week we're going to look at atrial fibrillation and particularly prophylaxis. Let's take a step back for a second and look at hemostasis, remembering that there are three components of hemostasis. There's platelet activation, the clotting cascade, and fibrinolysis. And while each of them works separately, they do function for a common purpose. Traditionally, we use two anticoagulants for the prevention or treatment of thromboembolic disease, those two being heparin or warfarin. And as everybody knows, these drugs have two major limitations. One is they have a narrow therapeutic window, which means that an excess dose quickly can cause bleeding. And secondly, for most people, there's a highly variable dose-response relationship, meaning that there needs to be constant monitoring by a lab. Also, some heparin-binding proteins are acute phase reactants. What that means is that their concentrations increase when a person is sick, and this causes everything to get out of kilter. So not surprising, everybody's looking for a better alternative, and there are some major examples of newer anticoagulants. Some of these affect factor 10A, they're 10A inhibitors, and the others are direct thrombin inhibitors. And we're going to talk about one of those direct thrombin inhibitors today. Also, some of these are able to be taken orally, which is attractive. So today we're going to talk about a drug called dabigatran. Dabigatran is also marketed under the trade name of Pradexa. It's orally active. As I mentioned, it's a direct thrombin inhibitor. It's used for the prevention and treatment of both venous and arterial thromboembolic disorders. The good news is it has a half-life of about 12 hours in people with normal renal function, which means that it can be dosed twice a day. Now, it's important to recognize that there is no known way to reverse its effects, as there are with the other drugs. But the good news is that there's no need to routinely monitor someone for their anticoagulation effects. So that means it's much more convenient for patients. Not surprisingly, that convenience comes at a cost, and it's about $8 a day. So the question is this cost effective compared to, say, warfarin? Today, Mark, you're going to take us through a study that was published in the journal Circulation. It asks the clinical question, is dabigatran cost-effective compared with warfarin for patients with atrial fibrillation? Mark, what did they find?
Well, this was a cost-effectiveness analysis, and I'm always a little suspicious of these when they're done by the people that made the drug, because somehow they can make anything look cost-effective. But this was by an independent group, and they were funded by the American Heart Association. So they looked at six different strategies. One was just doing nothing. One was aspirin. One was aspirin plus Plavix. One was warfarin. One was dabigatran, 110 twice daily, and then dabigatran or Pradexa, 150 twice daily. And they developed an imaginary cohort of 70-year-olds with atrial fibrillation and a moderate risk of stroke using the CHAD score. And the CHAD score is pretty widely used to assess the risk of stroke in patients with atrial fibrillation. It doesn't take a lot to be moderate risk. I mean, if you're a 75-year-old hypertensive, you're moderate risk. Mm-hmm. If you're a diabetic hypertensive, you're moderate risk. So pretty easy to get to that moderate risk level. So they looked at this group and followed them over an imaginary 30-year period of time and saw what happened over time. And they used good data from the literature about the likelihood of having a stroke and of bleeding and of and what the cost of all these things were, the cost of a bleeding episode, the cost of the drug and monitoring and all of that. So they also did what we call sensitivity analyses. So they didn't just pick one value for stroke risk and one value for bleeding risk. They modeled a range of values, and that's called sensitivity analysis. They also looked at, you know, how a really important thing, which was kind of novel in this analysis, which is percentage of time that you are therapeutic in the with your INR. Mm. So if you're somebody who's out of range a lot of the time, or if you're really well controlled most of the time, and that turned out to make a difference. So they found out that warfarin cost $12,000 per additional quality adjusted life year, which is a pretty good deal overall compared to aspirin alone. So for most patients in this base case of moderate risk, 70-year-old with AFib, warfarin was a pretty good deal. Usually we use a cutoff kind of arbitrarily of 50,000 per additional quality adjusted life years, and the dabigatran 150 milligrams cost 86,000 compared with aspirin, and the dabigatran 110 milligram cost 150,000, so way higher. The dual therapy with aspirin and Plavix was actually worse. You actually reduced the number of quality adjusted life years for higher costs compared to aspirin, so that wasn't even in the running. And so kind of to wrap it up, it was pretty complicated. When you're moving a lot of dials and moving a lot of variables around, it helps to look at the actual figure in the article. And I'd really encourage people to take a look at this study. There's a figure 3 that kind of sums it all up. And you can say, okay, my patient is well controlled with their INR, but they're high risk for stroke. What should I do? And it gives you, based on this model, the recommended intervention. So generally, if patients were more than 72% of the time, so 3 out of 4 times you check their INR, they're within range, dabigatran was never cost-effective for those. For patients who were very low risk, aspirin or no treatment was often a preferred strategy because they were at low risk of stroke. They're, you know, giving them an anticoagulant, you know, they have the same risk of bleeding as anyone else. The harm tended to outweigh the benefit. And
so
then,
go ahead,
yeah.
No, I was going to ask a big picture item, so please finish.
Well, just the dabigatran was cost-effective for patients who are at high risk of stroke, and especially those who are also at high risk of bleeding or who spent a lot of time out of range. So really, the time you should consider this drug, according to these authors, and I tend to agree, is in patients who are at very high risk of stroke, high risk of bleeding, and or spend a lot of time poorly controlled on their warfarin. They just can't manage to keep that INR therapeutic.
Right. So here's one of the things that I've heard from listeners is that we often throw these terms around. So I just want to take 1 minute and just mm-hmm. review what a quality adjusted life year is. So when you're talking about $86,000 for quality adjusted life year, $50,000, mm-hmm. I want it to be clear that we're not talking about the cost of the drug. This is the cost of a quality adjusted life year. And how should people think about that, Mark?
Well, yeah, it's how much you have to, how much more you are spending using this strategy to gain one more quality adjusted life year. And we, you know, we think about quality adjusted life years. If you're, you know, the guy on the Dos Equis commercials and, you know, the most interesting man in the world and, you know, your quality of life is 1.0, okay? If you're dead, it's 0. And in between, there have been a lot of studies to develop, how we assign a certain quality of life. So somebody who has a serious disability might have a quality of life of 0.9 or 0.8, depending on the disability. And, you know, obviously there's a range around it. It's an estimate. It's not the same for everybody, but it's a way to incorporate quality of life along with the length of life. And I think we all know that, you know, not all lives have equal quality of life or are enjoyed to the same extent, and it tries to incorporate that. So somebody who's 85 years old and demented and living in a nursing home, we wouldn't consider them to have the same quality of life as a healthy 25-year-old, for example. and it tries to take that into account. So, you know, what are we getting with that additional spending?
Great. And last question, when you said that, you know, the commonly accepted cutoff is around 50,000, I assume that that's a North American standard, and as you move to different countries and even within the country, there may be different variations on that?
Yeah, and it's interesting that, absolutely, first of all, I mean, in Uganda, for example, where they spend about $200 per person per year on health care, you know, I suspect it's probably a little different in terms of what a society might be willing to spend to add one quality adjusted life year to someone's life. It's interesting that the 50,000 has been used for quite a while in the medical literature. And, you know, obviously we've had inflation. So in a way, it's going down. I mean, if we had adjusted that for inflation, it might be 80,000 or 70,000 now.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, we're lowering the bar for what is considered cost effective.
Well, thanks for talking us through that. And mm-hmm. we'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.